3, 2, 1.
What will the world look like 10 or 20 years from now? The Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a peek. And we can't wait to show you what's coming. Subscribe now.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Thursday, May 16th. I'm Zoe Thomas for the Wall Street Journal. 9 out of 10 companies say cybersecurity risks rose over the past year. That figure comes from a new Wall Street Journal survey of compliance professionals. What do they say needs to change to make their business safer? David Smigala, Bureau Chief for Risk and Compliance Journal, will join us with some answers. And then, less than a year after its first vehicle model went on sale, electric car maker Fisker may be forced to shut down. And it's not the only EV startup that finds itself in financial distress. We'll find out why Fisker and others are struggling to live up to the promises they made to investors. We're starting with that Wall Street Journal survey. According to its findings, cybersecurity risks shot up substantially. Nearly all mid-sized companies, that's those with between $50 million and $1 billion in revenue, report feeling cyber threats had increased. The journal surveyed around 300 compliance professionals between mid-February and mid-March. Those are people who make sure a company adheres to its legal and regulatory obligations. More than one-third of respondents worked in the financial service sector, and around 9% worked in the technology sector. Joining us with more on this survey and what's behind the rise in concern for cyber threats is David Smigala, the Wall Street Journal's Bureau Chief for Risk and Compliance Journal. David, can you tell us why cybersecurity is top of mind for compliance professionals right now?
Why it's top of mind for compliance professionals are for two reasons, one of which was a series of high-profile hacks, in particular the MGM Resorts International hack, which brought down some of its computer systems, and the hack in February of United Change Healthcare Units as a ransomware attack that crippled a big part of the U.S. healthcare system. The other component is that the U.S. has been putting a lot of pressure on companies to communicate more promptly their cyber attacks. The SEC, which said that as of December, they have to disclose cyber attacks to the agency no later than 4 business days after they determine it's had a material impact on their operations. There's also been, in March, the U.S. Cybersecurity Infrastructure Security Agency published draft rules on how critical infrastructure companies would need to report significant cyber attacks within 72 hours and ransom payments within 24 hours.
Did the compliance professionals in this survey feel that they were prepared to respond to cybersecurity risks?
There's some uncertainty about their ability to respond. Nearly half of compliance professionals we surveyed said they only had a basic or novice level of expertise in overseeing cybersecurity compliance. There's some uncertainty about their ability to really respond adequately. They've also talked about the fact that many of them feel like they don't have sufficient headcount to face the challenge. Our survey reported that 35% of our respondents said insufficient headcount was a challenge that their cyber compliance department felt.
What about skills required? Was that something that some of the professionals surveyed mentioned?
Indeed. Compliance professionals said that cybersecurity was the biggest area in which they had to build their skill set among the areas that we surveyed for. Nearly 7 in 10 of respondents said that they've needed to gain more knowledge in the area over the past year. The one interesting part of it is that despite all of these challenges, about 90% of them said that their cybersecurity compliance program was at least effective, and only about 2% said they were ineffective. So there's a little bit of uncertainty about whether or not some of them want to build their skill set, but they think that they're doing an adequate job.
That was Risk and Compliance Journal Bureau Chief David Smigala. Coming up, famed car designer Henrik Fisker wanted to build what he called a digital car company. But 4 years after going public, his electric vehicle business is running out of money. We'll tell you why after the break.
What then will the future reveal?
There's one thing we know about the future. It's being built now.
We all have a stake in the future.
The future.
The future.
The future.
And the Wall Street Journal's Future of Everything podcast is here to give you a glimpse of what's on the way. I'm Danny Lewis. Join us as we dig into how science and technology are shaping the future.
For that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives.
Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
EV startup Fisker went public in 2020. It was famed car designer Henrik Fisker's second attempt at building an electric car company that could challenge Tesla. And it was one of a wave of new car startups that raised billions of dollars with bold promises to upend the auto industry. But Fisker and other young EV makers like it have struggled with the fundamentals of making and selling vehicles at a profit. Now Fisker is in financial trouble. A key agreement protecting it from creditors is due to expire tomorrow, and the company told employees it could be just weeks away from stopping work. For more on Fisker's collapse and what it tells us about the broader electric vehicle market, we're joined by WSJ reporter Sean McClain, who covers EV startups. Sean, tell us more about Fisker Inc. Henrik Fisker tried this before, and the company went bankrupt in 2013. So what was different about his strategy this time around?
So key to the company's strategy this time was what they called an asset-light model, or a digital car company. So one of the things that sank Fisker last time was high operating costs associated with owning a lot of the pieces of what you normally think about a car company, metal bending, supply chain, supplier parts, and things like that. He tried to divest himself of as much of that as possible. So he outsourced the production, focused more on the software side of things, comparing himself kind of Apple and Foxconn rather than General Motors in terms of its strategy. And the hopes in doing so was that they would keep operating costs lower, but also boost profitability. So they thought that they would need a lot less cash to start a business and a lot less cash to keep that business going.
So what went wrong?
Well, it turns out that there's a lot of steps in between an idea for a car company and a business strategy and actually executing that strategy and selling those cars. So one of the things that Fisker ran into was building the cars in Graz, Austria, and then shipping them to the U.S. to sell. During that process, Fisker would buy those vehicles wholesale, ship them to the U.S., and then it would have to find buyers. Now, one thing that people should know about the car industry and car dealers in the U.S. is when GM makes a vehicle, when it comes out the factory, it's sold off wholesale immediately to a dealer. So selling cars is not something GM ever has to worry about. Those things are instant revenue. Whereas Fisker had a large, at least a month-long gap between when it built the car and paid for it in Austria and when it was sold to a customer in the U.S. And that gap created a huge hole in Fisker's balance sheet and sucked up a lot of their cash, which they didn't have a lot to start with.
Tell us about some of the problems Fisker finds itself in.
Fisker has issued a going concern warning earlier this year, saying that they risk running out of cash. I mean, obviously there were execution problems in just being able to get vehicles from Austria to the U.S. quickly enough. But the other issue is that Fisker fell behind its own timeline in terms of preparing the vehicle for sale, getting it approved by regulators, getting the software that was supposed to be the selling point of this vehicle ready in time. So they shipped a vehicle that was, one, customers complained about features not working, and also was almost universally panned by reviewers. Fisker has acknowledged that there have been software issues that need fixing, and they've been slowly rolling out updates. Now, Fisker likes to point to other aspects of the vehicle that people liked, like the design. And then the final piece of the puzzle was actual staffing at Fisker itself. So Fisker missed two consecutive deadlines to file its financials with regulators, which Fisker said was down to understaffing and a lack of experienced professionals in its accounting department, which is not something you think about as a risk for a normal company that's gone public. So they had trouble keeping track of the revenue flowing in, organizing and filing the paperwork, and getting it through the auditing process out in time. Ultimately, that ended up triggering a default on a debt agreement with a key lender. Now they owe that investor $180 million, which is more than they have in the bank. So Fisker is currently in the process of winding down his business, selling off its assets to either to dealers or to auction houses or just online. And they've told employees that unless they can work out some sort of rescue deal, Their last day at work will be end of June.
We should note that a Fisker spokesman said sales and paperwork issues during a new model launch are common and that the company has worked diligently to resolve them. Sean, Fisker went public in 2020 through a deal with a special purpose acquisition company, or SPAC. And for those who aren't familiar with this, it's basically a public shell company that merges with a private company. It wasn't the only EV startup to go public in this way and gain a lot of investor interest. How are Fisker's peers doing?
There's been a couple of startups that went public that way that, you know, have filed for bankruptcy protection. Lordstown filed for bankruptcy protection. There's a electric delivery van company called Arrival, whose UK arm also filed for bankruptcy protection. Across the board, you know, companies like Faraday Future, Canoe, that a couple years ago had these broad ambitions to grow rapidly and sell a bunch of these vehicles, have really sort of pulled way back on that and are surviving by trying to conserve as much cash as possible, laying off people and sort of drastically curtailing their ambitions in order to keep the lights on.
So what does that tell us about the future of the EV market, particularly for startups in this area?
It tells you that the automotive industry is a tough one, and also underlines how impressive it is that Tesla's done what it has. You know, obviously they had a longer timeline and had less competition to build a business, but the automotive industry, I don't care if you're selling self-driving battery-powered cars or diesel trucks, it's low margin, requires high volumes to make a profit, and is just a brutally competitive industry. And so Tesla has managed to make it, but every single one of these EV startups, even if they're operating today and selling cars, are not making money. Most of them are losing money on every car they sell. And it's a long road, and they need a lot of capital in order to be able to get to the volumes and get to the price point they need to be able to make money in this business.
That was our reporter, Sean McClain. And that's it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Julie Chang with supervising producer Catherine Millsop. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back this afternoon with TNB Tech Minute. Thanks for listening.